Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening. I don't know who he is. I'll make a couple of statements off of that. I am not gay, and I have never been in a restroom in Union Station having sex with anybody. Have I been in a restroom in Union Station? Yeah, probably a couple of times. I've gone there. Suzanne and I have gone there to eat. There's a great bookstore there that I go to every so often because if it's gardening magazines, I go there to buy them.
Look, I said I would not do this today, but, you know, they found sound from a May 14th interview with a hometown newspaper. And the bird in the background is astonishing. I don't know whether it's life imitating art or art imitating life, but the German for bird is Vogel. And there's a Jewish word for gay, which is fagel, which is bird. And I just cannot believe that as he's giving this interview, the sound effect was in there. We did not add it. Now, you may say that this is trivial, and you may be right. It may be trivial. On the other hand, it's extremely comedic, and so therefore play clip 10 again.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening.
Well, he's right. And this could be a setup, and the man could be falsely accused, by the way. And the whole thing could be a hit squad from the Hillary campaign to take out another Republican before because our numbers are not going anywhere. That's true, but even if he is gay, what is it your business? You know, if it's one thing you have probably learned listening to me, all these years is that I'm a sexual libertarian. I told you that over and over again. I don't care what people do if they're adults and it's cooperative and no one's getting hurt. I've said that over and over again. The mere fact that a bunch of gay fascists hate me does not mean that I'm anti-gay. I'm anti-fascist, whether they be gay or straight. And let's get very clear about it. I think this is a classic case of persecution and rushing to judgment. Why, you have cameras showing them do it? And secondly, even if he was doing it, it's disgusting. Don't get me wrong. If the guy's cruising toilets, it's disgusting. But we have no proof of this. So what is this, another rush to judgment? Anyway, that's not really on my mind. There's nothing more we could say about this. This Craig thing is over. There's so many other stories that are really more important, but you don't want to talk about them. $5 billion a day for Iraq? How much? What's the number, Beowulf? It's $5 billion a day? More than that. Okay, let's say that we need all these billions a day for Iraq. How much of that do you think is waste? Let's say the number is a billion a day, which it's much more than that. But take a number, a round number, a billion a day for the war. What percent of that billion a day do you think is graft, corruption, and sheer waste? 5%, 10%, 20%, 50%? What percent of that money is being wasted because it's not necessary? How much of it is going in the hands of congressional donors? You see what I'm getting at? This is crazy. This is bankrupting America, incidentally. Oh, we don't see it now because they're printing money in order to compensate for the money going out for the war in Iraq. But, you know, when I was a young kid and I used to walk down the streets of New York, I didn't have any idea that every sewer cover cost money. And then when I became somewhat cognizant of costs of things and I realized that everything has a price tag on it, and I used to look at sewer covers. I found out how much a sewer cover cost. And I realized that everything requires money. Then when I got older, I found out that even wars cost money. And that in the past, wars have bankrupted nations. In fact, if you go back a couple of hundred years, you'll find out that the way the Rothschilds became not just rich, but mega rich, was lending money to the French government so that the French could continue to run their war. I don't know if you know that. In other words, they had to go to a private source for money to conduct their wars, because every war needs a budget and every budget requires funding. And sometimes a country runs out of funds and they have to borrow the funds. In this case, I don't know that the government is borrowing the funds. I think they're printing the funds, which means what we have here is a combination of hyperinflation that's being hidden, along with a gigantic cover-up as to where the money is actually going. Let us see where that money is going. I have no idea. Do you know where the money's going? Who's getting that money? How many senators and congressmen are making money off of this on one hand while saying they're against it on the other? Not on my mind either. I could care less. What am I supposed to do about it? Here are some other stories on michaelsavage.com. The University of Michigan has introduced public foot baths, but they're saying they're not for any religious reason whatsoever. It's simply for people to wash their feet. An off-duty cop was killed by an illegal alien drunk driver, but don't tell that to Wolf Blitz or anybody at ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox News, because the official party line is that all illegal aliens come here to pick the vegetables. Another story on michaelsavage.com, illegal alien beat and raped disabled 73-year-old victim, but don't tell that to anybody, because that doesn't fit the party line that they all come here to work. There are other stories I don't think I want to talk about. I went to the cardiologist today. I'll talk about that for 1 minute. I know many of you think it's self-indulgent, that it is, and I agree. But I told you, you're going to get a daily dose till it's over. I'm going through all these tests. I haven't had an echocardiogram for 15 years, but I decided, all right, I'm my own doctor, and that's good. That's how I run my life. But I figured, okay, get all these tests at a certain point in your life. So yesterday I had the CT scan, the ultrafast CT scan. Today I have the echocardiogram. Now, it's very funny. I get on the treadmill and I run and I'm running and running and running. I'm sweating like a beast with the wires. We've all done this over the age or whatever. So after the test of the echocardiogram, I'm sweating like a beast. The cardiologist says to me while staring at the screen, "Do you want the long or the short version?" I'm laying there with a beating heart. And I said, "Whatever you prefer, doctor." He says, "Perfect." I say, "Are you responding to what I said or the cardiogram?" Whereupon he smiled. See, he was a droll doctor and very smart. And his way of dealing with patients was to be droll. But I wanted to show him that I could be droll too while sweating like a beast with wires coming out of me. I would say one out of 150,000 got that dialogue down. But it's really good dialogue. It belongs in a novel. After the test, now I'm not going to repeat it. See, the answer is perfect. Could you imagine? Not a flaw, perfect. So I'm happy, I'm good. And that's all there is to it. I'm glad I did the test, which means I'm, with any luck, with God's will, I will be tormenting communists, socialists, liberals, anarchists, and perverts for at least 25 more years, with God's will. I will torture them on this show. Until eventually there's a just government in this country. And until they're all in orange jumpsuits or in a mental hospital, the ones who have destroyed my country. You hear what I just said to you? I am going to be here. There are many people who have said I wouldn't last in radio first. They said I wouldn't last a day because my accent was too New York. Then they said I wouldn't last a week because it was too this. Then they said I wouldn't last a year because of that. Then they said I would be this and that and that. Guess what? They're all out of the business and I'm still here. And I'm going to be here a good long time. You know why? Because somebody up there does like me. And that's all I can tell you. I'm the longest, and I'm not trying to tempt fate here. But I got to tell you, I'm celebrating inside. My father died at 57. My grandfather died at 47. The great-grandfather in the old country in his 40s, all of heart attacks. So I had a loaded gun to my head. And I've been running all my life with fear of this heart attack thing. It's why I went into the herbal thing and why I searched the world for cures. Why I wrote nutrition books and all of this other stuff. So apparently all the other things I've been doing for myself all these years, and maybe something else, maybe some other things have helped. But right now I'm not dead yet, and I don't intend to die very soon. And don't call me about it because it's not worth talking about. I just want to tell you that that's the inner Michael Savage going on right now. But we can talk about the war funding, the bird. I can't believe the bird. Play clip 14 again. I don't know what this works.
I'll make a couple of statements off of that. I am not gay, and I have never been in a restroom in Union Station having sex with anybody. Have I been in a restroom?
No, play clip 10, the bird one. I want to hear the bird man of Union Station.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening.
Okay. Well, again, he's using, again, malaprop. Constantly using malaprop, tone. Any possible opening. Every phrase the man uses is Freudian through and through. Every statement the man makes, it opens himself up to Freudian analysis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So on top of the $460 billion OA defense budget and $147 billion in a pending supplemental bill to fund Afghanistan and Iraq, President Bush is asking Congress next month for up to $50 billion in additional funding. Now, as you know, there'll be no rejection of this by the Democrats because they're rolling in pork. That is why their criticism of the war ended. They never really were opposed to the war. They were opposed to being left out of the benefits of war. And this is irrespective of the war against Islamofascism, which is real. No question about it, it is real, and that we need to fight it. But are we fighting it wisely and efficiently is the question. And of this $50 billion, I can only imagine how much of it is going into non-war-related expenses. That's one topic, and there are others, and we can talk about it. Let's begin in New York on a totally different topic. Fred, you're on WOR calling the Savage Nation. What's the topic?
Hey, this is Fred from Manhattan. You brought up yesterday ancient Egypt, King Tut, and I disagree with you a lot of things, but it's just one thing I disagree with you on is King Tut. As we know that over the centuries, as the original inhabitants of North Africa were African, there were no other groups of people in North Africa thousands of years ago. And, of course, East Africa, or I should say Egypt, was kind of separated from the rest of North Africa. As the years went by in Egypt, Arabs and other groups came in. That's why today you see this racial divide as you see in North Africa.
So you're saying when we hear sub-Saharan Africa and North Africa, which is really a nice way of talking about the color of the people's skin or their racial origins, right? Isn't that why they call it sub-Saharan as opposed to Northern Africa? Isn't that what they're really saying in a nice way?
Sub-Saharan Africa is basically an outdated term because, as we know, thousands of years ago, there was no separation between North Africa and
right. Well, then, wait a minute. So why are the folks in the arc running across from Algeria, Morocco, and into many regions of Libya and Egypt light-skinned compared to the dark-skinned folks in the African continent below that area? You're saying it's from Arabs who came from Arabia?
And Berbers. Well, actually, some of those people in North Africa are still black. You could say the question, how come mostly South America is not Indian anymore? You know, because there's a...
No, I'm not arguing with you. I'm not an expert in this area, and I suspect that what you're saying has a great deal of validity simply on the face of it, because the Arabs did go through a great period of conquest, and they did subdue Egypt. Egypt was not originally Muslim. It was conquered, and in fact, the Alexandria Library was burned when the Muslims took it over. You know that as well.
Yes, because, you know, Egypt, during Cleopatra time, was ruled by, for instance, the Ptolemies were Greeks. They were Caucasian. The earlier pharaohs, many of them were African. Some, as the years went by, they became mulatto, you know, what we call considered mulatto or mixed race types. A lot of them tend to look like what we call look like Puerto Ricans and, you know, that type of thing. And there's another nation called, below Egypt, called Kush or Nubia. Because, you know, Africa had many other civilizations other than Egypt. And these civilizations, as you know, became more advanced in Egypt.
Yeah, look, Fred, I have no axe to grind with this. I'm not trying to prove one thing or another. To me, you know, the facts speak for themselves. And I thought this was an interesting argument that people were saying King Tut should have been portrayed as darker. And see, it's not an issue that affects me, but it would affect me, I suppose, if I were a dark man or a man of darker color. Let's put it to you that way. But it's also alleged that Moses's wife was Ethiopian or black. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, she was from Ethiopian or Kushite from the Saudi Arabia, because, you know, a lot of Arabs today, you know, they're racist against blacks, and I don't know why.
That could explain why there are so many Jewish people in the jazz business. I'm just joking. Come on. Can't I make a joke? No, that's going to cause another problem.
Right. You know, it's one thing I want to bring up, too. You know, when the Arabs conquered Egypt, Nubia was Christian, and the ancient empire of Ghana and the Christian kingdoms of Nubia defeated the Arab armies. So it was just not France who defeated the Moors. It was other areas where the Arabs got their butt kicked as well. So I remember the Romans, after they conquered Egypt, they tried to conquer Nubia, Kush, too. So you had...
Right. Well, the Romans used African legions, by the way, or many Africans were in their legions, and then there were some of their, as you can expect, greatest warriors. We know that as well.
You know, as you know, Greece, you know, the Alexandria, Egypt, had very, you know, a lot of advancements in astronomy and medicine, and of course Nubia had this before. But you know, of course, as you know, Nubia learned these new academic subjects, or I should say not academic subjects, but learned these new advancements.
I think it's important for people to have pride in their race. Let me be very clear about it, whether they're black or white or Asian or whatever. I think it's very important that people have pride in their race if it's built upon reality and real pride rather than inventions. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if this is real, it's real. That's all there is to it. But, Fred, I can't comment any further other than to say that I don't, on the face of it, disagree with you that North Africa, so to speak, was once racially like the rest of Africa, and then it was conquered by Arabs, and then, of course, that explained why the people became lighter skinned. It's possible. But I haven't studied it, Fred, so I can't even comment.
You know, Egypt,
but I want to thank – I don't know if you agree with anything I ever say, but on this issue, I hope we have some accord.
I agree with some things you say. EgyptSearch.com talks a lot about this, so they have a interesting talk about this as well.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to this show and being such a keen observer and so anxious to comment. See that? You don't know what to expect from me. But I'm a new man. What do you think about the birds in the background of Larry Craig? Could you play 10 for 1 minute?
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively.
I don't believe this.
Politically over the last 2 decades. And they
birds
love
again
to stick their finger in people's eyes.
All right, but
they can find
the
any
German for bird is Vogel, and Fagel is a Jewish word for gay. And here we have birds in the background when he gave this interview. Nobody put that sound effect in. That was not inserted. It was there. I mean, I don't get it. Sometimes I think that things are stranger than they look.
Savage.
It's the day of the birds. You know, now when I read a newspaper headline, everything has a new meaning for me. Here's a headline from the New York Times. It says, "Top players cruise at Open." You have to start reevaluating every headline now after what's going on. But I'm looking forward to the next few days. I just got my first set of the History Channel's Dogfights, the complete season one. I've never seen anything as well done. I don't. Anyone out there, raise your hand, seen Dogfights on the History Channel? Where they reconstruct, first they show stock footage from various wars and the dogfights. Then they show some of the pilots who were still living interviewed, who were in the dogfights. We're not talking about a Michael Vick thing here. We're talking about airplane, jet fights and propeller fights. And then they show you reconstructions, digital reconstructions of the dogfights that are absolutely the most spectacular things I've ever seen. This should be required viewing for every boy in America. Instead of showing boys, other stuff, you want to show your little boy what it is that built this nation and kept this nation safe. You know, I'm serious. Sarasota, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, that bird is almost like proof of a higher power right there.
Well, you could look at it that way. I was saying, here's Craig giving a speech in 07, trying to preserve his name, and there's a bird whistling in the background. I said, this is too much.
They had that when they were actually publicly addressing an issue sometime to see if they were actually lying or not. It's like guys with a lie detector.
Yeah, and if there were birds in the restroom, that'd be another story, but that's going too far.
Do you something else about that?
What?
Why do you think that he would plead guilty those months ago and then turn around and try and plead innocence again? If somebody tried to get me to plead to something like that, they would have to drag me kicking and screaming into the courtroom.
Yeah, I don't understand why he pled guilty other than to try to get a... Look, he's a U.S. senator. U.S. senators have a tremendous amount of power and impunity. He probably figured that he could plead guilty, get out of there to avoid the press, right? And then through the back room, wipe it away. That's what I guess. He made a big mistake.
Yeah, that's a pretty nasty crime to be implicated of, though.
Yeah, but how come they're making such a big issue of this when we had Bonnie Frank living with a guy who ran a house of prostitution in his apartment? Ted Kennedy, who was having an affair with a woman, the car goes off a bridge. She drowns. He reports it 10 hours later. He's still in power. Do I have to go down the list of Democrat scandals that didn't result in the same kind of press coverage?
Well, Dr. Savage, I hope to see that bird again come election time.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice if we could count on this bird and realize that the bird may be divinely inspired and that the bird appears every time somebody's lying? Wouldn't that be great if we finally had something we could count on, that every time Hillary gives a speech, a bird appears flying around and starts whistling over her head and she has to look up? Yeah. Mississippi, George, what do you think about this bird story?
Oh, man, I think it sounds like something straight out of the Bible, but you know it isn't.
It isn't, right. But what do you think about the Craig thing? Should he stay or go?
I think he should stay. I mean, that's par for the course, you know, for those fools in Washington.
You're not telling me they're all doing the stall job, are you?
Well, no. I mean, you got good guys like Ron Paul that just kick ass in every way you can possibly imagine to defend the Constitution.
Well, I'm not a big Ron Paul fan, but okay, I understand he has some really good points. But I'm sure that Mr. Craig is not the only senator who has, let us say, skeletons in his closet.
No. I think he fits right in. I think this is mandatory to go into politics and be doing this stupid soft tapping stuff. It's disgusting.
Yeah. But to jump on it now, say, well, it is disgusting and all of that, I mean, doesn't it show a lack of judgment, though, to engage not in this behavior, but in this behavior in that way in a public restroom?
Well, you know, it just shows you where we're at. We just don't pay attention to the people that we put in high offices, and it's time to shut the TV off and start paying attention to these fools.
It really is. It really is. But then who else would take these jobs? Thanks for the call. That's the problem. Chicago, Arlene, welcome. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, well, since you found out you've got a long term to go, a long life to go.
Let's say I hope so, you know, because you can't tempt fate.
I do, too. I pray for you. I just want to let you know your poodle, Teddy, will probably be at your side for a long, long time, too, because we have one about the same size, and she's going to be 19 coming September.
I hear they live long. He's a miniature, not a toy. I'm so glad he's 11 pounds. They say that's the miniature, not the toy. Because I don't like a toy dog. He's a miniature. But I hear that they live in their 20s sometimes. Amazing. My first dog, I told you, Tippy died at 7. They threw him in a garbage truck. In the old days, a dog died young. There was a rule of thumb when I was a kid in grade school. I say, Mom, how long is my dog going to live? Because kids want, well, each dog's year is equal to approximately 7 to 10 years of a human life. So you do the quick math, and you figure by the time you hit high school, he's dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why do you think they drop dead so young in those days, and today they live on forever?
Ours gets a lot of exercise. The only problem is she's got a cataract in one eye, so she goes around in circles.
I understand. Well, I thank you for the kind. Well, my dog ate kennel ration, which was probably horse meat, a vegetable a dog never saw in those days. If I dared drop a vegetable on the floor in that kitchen in Queens on the linoleum and the dog came near it, my father would say, get it off the floor. Dogs don't eat vegetables. Get it away. You know, it's like it was, they don't eat vegetables. They eat meat. They're carnivores. Don't put anything, nothing with fiber near that animal. The things you grow up hearing. I swear I never saw the dog eat a vegetable. Nothing. Nothing. Not a carrot. Not a carrot. He ate pure, unadulterated dead horse, I think. Kennel ration they ate. That's all. That was the only dog food in those days was kennel ration. Or Alpo, I think, came along. But that was like Avis as opposed to Hertz. You know what I'm saying? If you could, you'd get a Hertz. If you couldn't, you'd get an Avis. It was like the other brand. But everyone who you wanted to get your dog something good, you got him that good old horse meat with glue in it. What the world? Do you have what the world needs now is love, sweet love? What a world we're living in. Do you see this? Another illegal alien killed another person. Officer now in Oakland County. I killed off-duty Flint police officer Vincent Deanna, 25-year-old Raymond Panada, second-degree murder, operating a vehicle while intoxicated, causing death. I said this in my Freedom of Speech Award, which is why they won't play it on C-SPAN. I said, if I report that illegal aliens are engaging in an epidemic of drunk vehicular homicides, I said, whose free speech am I denying? It may be an uncomfortable statement, but it is not an untruthful statement. It is a truthful statement. And the reason so many illegal aliens engage in driving drunk and possibly killing people is for a number of reasons. One, it's a cultural thing. Number two, they know they can get away with it if they're caught by changing names and running back to their home country. That's a fact of reality, and we all know it. That's why C-SPAN wouldn't play it. But that's their loss, not mine. Go on my website and take a look at it. Portland, Oregon, Mike, KXL, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I want to talk to you. Hey, I just have heard the senator vehemently deny many times that he is homosexual, but I haven't heard anyone bring up the subject or ask him if he's bisexual.
I don't know. You know, I think a person's sexuality is fundamentally not my business. I don't care what their sexuality is. Soliciting sex in a toilet is kind of disgusting. But you know what I'm saying? It's kind of disgusting, and it shows very bad judgment on his part. Let's say he has those impulses, okay? Why did he do it in toilets? Think about what kind of judgment that. You know, there were times in this country when the FBI, the CIA, all of those agencies would never hire somebody who was oriented in this direction. Do you know why? Because they said that they were weak and easily blackmailed. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes me, you think about, you know, somebody would want just the thrill.
In other words, let's say a Russian guy could come in if they knew the guy had this kind of orientation and, like, make an eye at him in a toilet. He goes in a stall, he does it, and they get a picture of him. They own that congressman. They own that FBI agent. You follow me, Mike?
Absolutely.
Weakness of character. The Italians have a word for it that's different than Fogel or Fagel. They call him Finoc, I think, is bird. Every language has another word. Every language and culture has a different way of describing it. And it is frowned upon by real men. Do you know why it is frowned upon? Because they see it as weakness, not as strength. Now, we've been brainwashed into thinking not only is it not weakness, but it's actually more superior to a heterosexual. You understand all of that as well. That we're supposed to believe that, oh, somehow you're better if you are oriented in this direction. Well, let me tell you something. Most people haven't bought that yet. Thanks for the call. Can you play What the World Needs? Or play the bird sound for 1 minute. The birdman of Alcatraz. That's not the best bird sound. You can't give me a better one? I don't like the water in the background. Find another bird sound that would make it funnier. You got to get me. There's a bird that's in town right now near me. The California Jays are here. They're eating the fruit, the remnants of the fruit. They're eating the apples from my tree that I didn't pick. The apple a day is. Did you see that article on my website about pectin and apples and how phenomenally healthful pectin is? You know, the old adage, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Amazing, it's true. I know another adage that I haven't heard yet. An orgasm a day keeps the doctor away. No one's ever described that one and how that works. But I guarantee you that has something to do with health, too. Now, can you quantify, has anyone ever done an epidemiological study on the number or the frequency of orgasm and, let us say, pick the disease? No one has done that epidemiological study. I just made somebody's master's degree possible just now because I'm so creative and inventive. What a great study that would be, and it would be worthwhile. In other words, you would analyze, let's say, rate or incidence of heart disease, and then you go, but the people can't tell you the truth, won't tell you the truth necessarily, and they don't remember. That's the problem with epidemiological studies. They're somewhat imprecise because you can't really, it's all recall. Like, over the last year, how many times did you have the big O? Was it once a day, once a month, once a week? You know what I'm saying? So the guy makes, or he makes it up. So you see, it's not reliable. But it's an interesting study. You have What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love? No, you didn't find it yet? No, I can't find it still. So what else is in the news here? Senator says Craig should resign. I'm going on michaelsavage.com to see what's on my own website. Did you see this one? Democratic fundraiser is a fugitive in plain sight. Did you see the poor Chinese person living in a nondescript house who's one of the biggest donors to the Hillary, Norman Sue, lives in this nonentity house? He's given tons of money to Hillary. It's a, like a repeat all over again of Bill Clinton getting money from Gretchen. One of the leading political fundraisers in the country this year is Norman Sue. He, let's see, he raised more than $1 million. No one knows who he is. No one ever heard of him. He lives in a tiny little house, a non-entity house. Nobody knows where his money is coming from. You hear this? And we're not supposed to ask either. But he's been around a while giving money to Democrats. And Mr. Sue supports other Democrats besides Mrs. Clinton. On June 23, he helped throw a sixth anniversary of his 60th birthday fundraiser for California Rep. Mike Honda. A few days later, he joined Blackstone Group Chairman Stephen Schwartzman and lawyer David Boies to host the $1,000 a plate 40th birthday bash for Rep. Patrick Kennedy of Rhode Island. I didn't know Kennedy was out of rehab. I guess they let him out for the party. Where's the money coming from? This is amazing to me, what a corrupt nation we are. Well, not to say he's corrupt, of course. I just said what a corrupt nation this is. I didn't say he's corrupt. You know. Did you see this picture of a guy who's been tarred, feathered, and tied to a lamppost in Ireland? Oh, my God. Go on to michaelsavage.com. There's a guy who's been tarred and feathered by the underworld. The Irish are tough. Underneath it all, they're still pretty tough people. They took a drug dealer off the streets. They tarred him and they feathered him, and they're making him stand in the street with a sign that says, "I'm a drug dealing S-bag." He's tied to a lamppost. It's amazing what the Irish are capable of when pushed. I guess they haven't been pushed far enough in America yet. Tied to a lamppost, he stands with his head and upper body covered in tar and feathers. A makeshift placard hung around his neck with a piece of string announces the reasons for his treatment. It is a very public humiliation and a medieval one. It says, almost 10 years since the Northern Ireland's troubles officially ended, this remains the crude face of justice on the streets of South Belfast. This man was subjected to the painful tarring and feathering on the Taf Munna estate, a loyalist stronghold in the city. Locals had accused the victim, who was in his 30s, of being a drugs dealer. And when the police did not act, they took the law into their own hands. Two masked men tied up the accused drug dealer, poured tar over his head, and then covered him in white feathers, apparently from a pillowcase. A small crowd, including women and children, looked on as the men then adorned their victim with a placard reading, "I'm a drug-dealing S-bag." Pictures of the punishment were sent to a local newspaper. Is there any way we can get these Irish thugs in America and elect them to office? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, the trailer park trash. Britney Spears is in the news again with a dress that doesn't cover her derriere. And, of course, you know, we're all looking at it. We can't help. We're all waiting for the final blow. Well, she put on a lot of weight, man. She, you know, I'm nothing against it, but, you know, when you have this kind of weight, that's what the muumuu was invented for. The muumuu, the burqa, I mean, anything. But anyway, going back to the tar and feather story, do you know where this began? Does anyone know how this began? Don't raise your hand. I'll tell you. Tarring and feathering, as the Irish did to the drug dealer, has been used as a punishment for almost 1,000 years. During the Third Crusade to the Holy Land, King Richard ruled that any Royal Navy sailors caught stealing should be tarred and feathered. In 1623, the Bishop of Halberstadt in Germany used the technique to discipline a group of misbehaving nuns. But to you, the average American, tarring and feathering is probably best known from its widespread use in America during the War of Independence in the 1770s, when it was used to punish those accused of loyalty to the British colonial power. The victim was usually tarred and feathered and paraded around the streets in a cart as a warning to other would-be traitors. If I had the power, every newscaster on ABC, CBS, NBC, and a few other channels would be tarred and feathered and driven around America in a caravan. I would start with a Christiane Amanpour. I would tar and feather her, and I would drive around America for collaborating not with the colonial powers but with the Islamo-fascist powers. And I work my way down from there. I'd say right now she's at the top of the feeding chain. She'd be number one. Number two would probably be a Wolf Blitzer. Imagine the ugly sight of Wolf Blitzer tarred and feathered. Let me take that one back. I don't even think I could tolerate him in tar and feathers. So you see, there was a time that America knew how to take care of itself. And in Ireland now, the people are taking care of themselves because the government has gone soft. And, of course, we don't want vigilantism in America. We want to leave it to the intelligent, the justices in America. You know, they do such a wonderful job with the child killers and child molesters. Let's leave it to the courts to decide, since they do such a superb job. But go onto my website and check out the Tarred and Feathered Drug Dealer. Tarred, feathered, and tied to a lamppost. Justice for a drug dealer on the streets. And don't copycat that one, please. Do not do that. Although, no, I shouldn't say anymore. There it is. WOR New York, Rich, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, Mike. As usual, no matter what you talk about, it's always fascinating. You've taken me on a trip down memory lane tonight talking about the kennel ration. I raised a dog for 16 years through the 70s and 80s as a little Italian greyhound. And I remember that's all we fed her. And I can remember it came in the six packs. And as soon as you talked about it, I could smell the stuff. I can remember.
Yes, yes, yes. If you opened that can, didn't it have a particular aroma?
Absolutely. And the minute you said it snapped into my memory. I could remember it. And I said,
well, I'll tell you another kennel ration story that's absolutely true. May they both rest in peace. We had a friend of the family, and I think he was Hungarian, and he was known for being a tightwad. And he would always come over to our house, and my mother was generous. Every night, even though he had eaten dinner or whatever, she'd say, you want something? Sure, I'll have something. And he would eat a big meal, okay? Now, it wasn't that we didn't want him to have the food or we were upset that he had it. He was just a skin flint, right? So one night he comes over, and my father says, hey, Hank, did you eat yet? No. He says, would you like a hamburger? Oh, okay, I'll take one. He says, all right, let me make it for you. Now, my father never cooked an egg in his life. He went in there with fervor, was making a kennel ration hamburger. He fed it to this guy, Hank. Hank ate the whole burger, and then my father said, how was it, Hank? Delicious. So I don't think that it was that bad because Hank loved it, the Hungarian.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening.
Play what the world needs now, please. We just got to stop this. That what the world needs now is love, sweet love. Because there's too much hate going on in this country. I'm going to be the one to bring us together. Because as you well know, I'm a loving guy, loved by all. And it's time to bring us all together before we all are knocked down and fall apart. Oh, my God. What version is this? Awful. God. It sounds like a bad wedding at Leonard's at Great Neck. Like in the middle of the day when they didn't want to get the night rental, it was too much money, they did the party. Remember those people that like to get a wedding during the day and you didn't want to go? Go there in the heat, dying at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're supposed to dance and eat cake. Who can do that? Everyone says, all right, have a good time. Have a good time. Those are the days like kennel ration days. The same thing. All these things that went on in those days. Daylight weddings, kennel ration, Jackie Gleason, Dwight D. Eisenhower, F-86, Oldsmobile 98, Carvel. I could do the Hulu. I mean, more or less, they're all whirled up into one. Was it a better world? Was it a worse world? Who can say? It doesn't matter because it's not coming back. It's gone with the wind. So we're looking at the stories of the day. And here's history repeating itself again. Here is another Clinton again receiving money from a fundraiser who lives in a little house with untold millions of dollars, and you're not supposed to ask where the money came from. Leading Clinton donor stays below the radar, Norman Sue. That's a big story. It did make it, by the way, I think, to the L.A. Times. The Washington Post even covered it, shockingly, right? No, even the L.A. Times couldn't resist this one. Democratic fundraiser is a fugitive in plain sight. It's on michaelsavage.com. They don't know where he got the money from. He's a rainmaker, Mr. Sue. The 40-year-old man who says he had sex with Craig, I'm throwing that in the garbage. What happens if Larry Craig resigns from the Senate? Governor Butch Otter, I'm not making that up either, Butch Otter will appoint someone to fill a vacancy until the next general election, which is set for November 2008. Republican Governor Butch Otter will appoint somebody, and I'm sure there'll be another Republican. Let us pray that the next one has a little better judgment than this one. Where does he go from here, a guy like this? What does he do? I mean, this is humiliation. Never mind the act itself, but in a toilet and getting caught? Ooh, I feel bad for the wife, the children, the grandchildren. You got to think of these things, you know, before you go in the toilet and start tapping your foot to Dixie. Do you have Dixie out there? Because I want to show you something. If you can I'm afraid of going to public toilet now. What if I'm there and I'm spending, and a tune comes to my head? I'm afraid now. Play Dixie.
Southerns, here you come.
Can you try tapping your foot to that? Look what would happen.
Two arms in Dixie.
Oh, this is a bust immediately.
Let our hearts be now united. Two arms.
Oh, you're busted immediately. The minute you tap your foot to Dixie, you're dead. You're done. You don't even have to have a wide stance and you're finished. How about the other one I played the other day, The Night It Broke? What was that song? I forgot already. Fly Me to the Moon? What was the one I was playing? Beowulf, I forgot already. Back in the Saddle. Now, I tell you the truth. Even this song, an innocuous Gene Autry tune, if you tap your foot to this in, let's say, Wyoming, you're busted, you're finished. In New York, of course, you could do a tap dance in a toilet stall, and the worst that happens to you is you go to work for Mayor Bloomberg. Not bad. Quick. Nobody got it. No one cares. It's not considered funny in the Waldorf Astoria culture that I don't come from. Akron, Ohio. Bill, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about the tarring and feathering, and I thought that was a fantastic idea for drug dealers and maybe for some other people as well.
How about other people? The Irish are fed up with their liberal political system, and so they tarred and feathered the guy. And the pictures on my website are amazing. If you click on it, you could see what they did to him. They tied him to a lamppost.
Well,
we can't recommend that in America. That's violence.
Obviously not, but I'm married to an Irish girl, so I'd hate to think what would happen to me if I would commit any of these types of acts or crimes or anything else either.
Well, what if you got caught tapping your foot in the stall? I don't think she would do this. I think you'd get worse than that.
Tarring and feathering, and not just the top half, but the bottom half might get it.
If you ever got caught tapping your foot in the stall like Craig and you're married to this Irish girl, I think tarring and feathering would be the least of your troubles.
My troubles, because sharp instruments might be involved in that as well.
I heard stories many years ago when I was living in Hawaii, guys would come back from Vietnam and tell stories about what went on in Thailand with Thai girlfriends if they caught you with another woman or even suspected it. You ever hear any of those stories?
I have not, but I can imagine.
Yeah, there you go. That's like imagining a hot curry without actually tasting it.
Jeez. Hey, by the way, Dogfights, I agree with you 100%. Fantastic. Best program on the best network.
Can you believe that series on History Channel? You know, when I say Dogfights, people think I want to buy the complete Michael Vick tapes.
No, those are...
No, I mean, it's you have seen them, right? Like, which war did you see?
I like the ones from World War II because I'm a P-51 Mustang fan, and anything that does with the Mustangs and the Messerschmitts, it's just amazing, but it's phenomenal.
You know something? Of all of the wars that they reconstructed, the Dogfights, the World War II ones were the most exciting. I'm not a big fan of the biplane fights, although they're kind of fun. I don't even know what's in season when I'm looking now. I hope they're not World War One. Let's see. Season one, long odds. Hey, World War II Navy Ace Swede Vesjatsa. Dog fights in the Middle East, Israeli Air Force hunt for the Bismarck. Oh, this is good. Guy like me, I'm set. The Zero Killer, the Last Gunfighter, Death of the Japanese Navy. Look at these. Flying Tigers, Guadalcanal, Hell over Hanoi, dog fights. And then finally, MiG Alley and Air Ambush. Legendary fighter pilot Colonel Robin Olds and his squadron, the Wolfpack, used themselves as bait to lure North Vietnamese MiG-21s into the most elaborate air sting of the war, codenamed Project Bolo. I mean, could you resist looking at this? Impossible. That's why I'm going to stay home, I say, and watch these movies. This is amazing. This is season one. I mean, don't you think this would be inspiring for young men to watch?
Absolutely. And it used to inspire me just to read about the things. And it would be absolutely phenomenal for the young folks to watch that stuff today and understand where they came from and why they are able to enjoy what they enjoy right now.
I would say, you know, I've said this for years, that the Military History Channel, History Channel about World War II in particular, should be required viewing in every American high school history class, the entire series. Then they would understand the odds that our men faced in World War II, what was done, why it had to be done, and the world we inhabit and who we inherited it from. They don't understand this at all because they've been polluted by the social liberals who have distorted history entirely. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. Modesto, California. Tim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
That's a blackbird singing in that soundbite. Possibly a red-winged blackbird. I don't know the genus or species.
Wait. Are you a bird watcher?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, hold on now. Wait a minute. We're talking about when Larry Craig spoke previously, before he was busted, he spoke to a local paper. Listen to clip 10. We're just for bird now, not for fun. Let's hear it now.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically.
All right, let's pause right here. As an ornithologist, would you say that's a blackbird?
Yes, I would. Yeah.
And what does the blackbird symbolize in a poetic metaphor?
Mike, I don't know.
No, you see, I thought you were going to finish it up. Is there a literary expert in the house who could tell us what the now we have an ornithologist who just called. Now, Tim, you're sure that's a blackbird?
When I lived in Montana in the Bitterroot, there would be, at a certain time of the year, there would be like hundreds of them in the trees, the pine trees, and you couldn't see one, but it would be deafening.
All right. Let me send you a free gift. You're getting a free copy of The Political Zoo for that. Now, if there's a literary type in the audience, what does the blackbird symbolize in literature or such? Because birds have always had symbolic meaning, right or wrong? And we'll move on. We could talk about dog food, kennel ration, kennel burgers for Hungarians. Now, don't get mad at me if you're of Hungarian descent. It happened. It wasn't that he was Hungarian. It was that he was Hungarian and cheap that he got the kennel burger. It wasn't that he was Hungarian. My father had nothing against people who descended from the Huns. This guy always wanted a free meal in the house. He gave him a kennel burger. He never died. He did die not too long thereafter. I felt guilty. I connected the two, truthfully. I hope to God there was nothing in that. Kennel ration was made from what, horse meat? They killed horses, didn't they? Yeah, I think they killed horse meat. Las Vegas, Nevada. Martin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mike. I've got a wonderful story about kennel ration.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
My uncle, who's now passed on, was in the Korean conflict. And at the time, they were just introducing police dogs. And they realized that the dogs had a lot more rations of kennel ration than they had of their canned meat. And mm-hmm. The dogs seemed to like it better than... they like their canned meat. So my uncle one night decided to try it, cooked it up. His entire platoon liked it. So they did a math equation and says, you know, there's enough here for the dogs and for us until the next cargo ship gets in.
Yeah.
They took all their canned food that they had they didn't like and gave it to the South Koreans. And
yeah.
They sustained themselves off canned vegetables and kennel ration for months. Loved it.
All right. So my father didn't kill the Hungarian friend, Hank. Thank God. You just cleared that up.
Hungarian. I'm going to tell you that from personal experience, Mike. I got one more quick story about cars.
No, that's funny. I mean, I'm glad to hear that kennel ration didn't harm the troops. I mean, if they could, you know, it didn't smell bad, to be honest with you. When you open that can, it's strange way it produced a certain salivation in some people.
For kids, I think my aunt and mother fed it to us. We had a lot of kids running around. They always had.
That's funny. That is funny. Hey, man, thank you. You see, I get the regular guy listening to the show who understands my sense of humor. This show is not meant for the elites who sit there and sneer at me. Let them all go do what they do. I don't really care whether they like me. I like regular people. I actually enjoy speaking in the palaver of the average man, and I really do enjoy goofing around and then tying it back to politics, you know? So we're talking about all these topics of the day, and we are close to Labor Day. I know it. I can tell you right now by my web traffic, I would say the web traffic being down 20-30% over this week, a lot of people are away. They're not here. And if they're here, they're not interested in the news or politics. I can tell you, so the audience and probably radio is down the same. That would be my guess. But there's still a significant audience. If the audience is 10 million, you got 7 million that week, so what? It's still a big audience, right? The tent is still 7/10 full. That huge tent in my head. The average quarter hour tent, the AQH tent is still enormous. Richard, KNEW, San Fran, Frisco. I can't even say the word correctly anymore. It's even worse than I thought it was. After I got stabbed in the back by all of my good friends here, I can't even say the word San Francisco correctly anymore. Richard, KNEW, welcome to the Savage Nation.
That's all right, Michael. You got it right anyway. My topic is the military channel, and as much as I enjoy watching that channel, I think they're giving away too much information to the enemy. The technology that we've got, all the stuff we're using, the tactics we use, I think they're giving out too much information.
Okay, you mean like the current stuff in Iraq, the military history channel?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yes, okay, in that sense, I would say let's be guarded, but World War II footage, the terrible battles of World War II, the wonderful victories of World War II, the odds against us in World War II in the beginning. I don't know how many people listening to this show were young realized that we almost lost World War II. It was not a given. We all look back and say, oh, what a great victory it was over the Nazis and over the Japanese. But it wasn't like a walk in the, you know, cakewalk. For the first few years, it was touch and go, Richard. I think you may know that.
Yeah, and if you look at Hitler's plan of attack to take over the world, the Muslims are doing the same thing.
Well, I have said the same. I have talked about the probes. I have talked about the fact that the West was weak. I have said that Hitler should have been stopped at Munich, but he wasn't, and that's why he went on country after country. I have said the Islamofascists should be slammed to the mat and broken in half before they take over yet another country, this time not through the bullet, but through the book. I've said it over and over and over again, but nobody listens to me. Instead, I am condemned by the drug addicts in San Francisco with nice suits and big, big old Pepsodent smiles. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Play clip 16. I want to hear this one. 16.
There is sort of a thrill to the hunt, to the excitement of sex in a public place, of doing something that potentially does have negative consequences for you.
Oh, my. That's a so-called professor, Richard Tewksbury, of so-called Ohio State University, talking about why gays do this in bathroom stalls. See, there's even an expert on dirty behavior in a bathroom stall now, passed off his scholarship in a debased America. See how it does? Dan Savage, why gays hook up. Let's hear clip 17.
Well, it's a big problem in the lives of a lot of the men who do it. It's not a problem in the lives of most openly gay men. Invariably, when there's a bust in a public restroom where there's this lewd activity going on, reporters are shocked to discover that the men who've been arrested are heterosexually identified, straight identified, married men, frequently, and priests. Very rarely do you hear about openly gay men being busted in a place like that.
I see. So it's not the gays who are doing it. Gays only do good things. So gays are not doing it in the toilets. It's not openly gay men. It's closedly gay men. Let's listen to 18.
I'm saying it's a release mechanism for guys who are closeted. This is, once again, a la with, as with Ted Haggard, who claims to be heterosexual now, with Bob
All
Allen.
Right, so this is like needle exchange. If you give the junkies needles, they won't be using heroin anymore? So if you give everyone a toilet, this is more and more and more insanity is what it is. It's crazy, the whole thing is. So now he's not gay, in other words, even though he allegedly did it with a man. The homosexual fanatics are saying he's not gay. There's nothing gay in what he did. It's a repressed hetero who does this. They only do it openly and healthfully, like your grandmother. That's crazy, the whole thing. But now you have experts coming out talking about this, about the whole sexual thing. Let me hear 22.
There is a separate category, which is men who have sex with men. And so people can genuinely get up and say, I'm not gay, but I'm still one of these people that have sex with men. You know, this is political speak, and these are attorneys talking, and they may split hairs like that.
All right, that's enough of this. Please, I can't take any more of this filth. A pox upon all their houses.
Savage.
right, hold it. We got breaking news. Just broke about a minute ago. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton says she's going to give to charity the $23,000 in donations she has received from a fundraiser who is wanted in California for failing to appear for sentencing on a grand theft charge. The decision came minutes ago as other Democrats began distancing themselves from Norman Sue, whose legal encounters and links to other Demon Cat donors have drawn public scrutiny the past few days. Al Franken, the failed talk show host and never funny comedian, is giving back money. Representative Michael Honda and Doris Matsui of California and Rep. Joe Sestak of Pennsylvania said they would divest their campaigns of Sue's donations. I don't know what the word divest means, but it means they're giving the money back because it's dirty money. Sue is a fundraiser for Clinton, HSU, and is described as a devoted fan of the presidential candidate, blah, blah, blah. Clinton campaign spokesman Phil Singer said the $23,000 included contributions from Sue to Clinton's presidential campaign. This is like Arkansas all over again. Reports in the Wall Street Journal and the Los Angeles Times this week have caused numerous Demon Cat candidates and organizations that have benefited from Sue's contributions to reconsider the donations. Failed Franken's campaign received $2,300 from Sue. Matsui received $6,100. Sestak and Honda each received $1,000. Well, anyway, there's the whole thing. So we don't know who Sue is. In 1991, Mr. Sue pleaded no contest to a single felony count of grand theft, but failed to appear in court for sentencing, according to Ronald Smetana, a California deputy attorney general who prosecuted the case. Wow. Now, this could turn into a big story. Smetana said Mr. Sue collected about $1 million from investors by falsely claiming he had a contract to import latex gloves. That's funny unto itself. Smetana said he planned to ask a judge to sentence Sue to prison. We would obviously like Mr. Sue to return and face justice, said Smetana, who said he had assumed Sue, a Hong Kong native, had fled the country. In a statement today, Mr. Sue said, I believe I properly, blah, 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 blah. You don't return library books. The tax squad shows up in your chimney. That's all. But if you make your money illegally and it goes to a politician, don't worry about it. You can skate on thin ice for years. Members of the Paw family is another one involved. The Paw family? Spokeswoman Gloria Chan said the money would go to local community organizations. So anyway, this just happened minutes ago. I mean, a mountain out of a molehill out of a mountain. To me, it's as big a story as the toilet job that Hillary Clinton has to give to charity money she took from a man who was basically a felon on the lam. To me, it's a bigger story than the pigsty. That's all. The pigsty there in the airport. But no, it won't. You see, it won't get the coverage. The LA Times covered it to their credit, but did the New York Times cover it? Did Pinchy cover it? No. Did the Washington Post cover it? No. The Washington Post didn't cover it. The New York Times didn't cover it. So the article's up right now on michaelsavage.com. Go ahead, click on it already. Raise the clicks. Above it, I put some salacious material for you, figuring I would try that. It says, I got it from the Daily Mail in London. I figured I'll go that way and see what works. Brittany seems to have mistaken a top for a dress as the outfit fails to cover her exposed dimpled bottom. All right, you don't like it, I'll take it down tomorrow. But if you want to look at it, go ahead. Is that illegal to show if it came from the Daily Mail? No. It's better than looking at Larry Craig's face after getting caught in a toilet. I'll tell you that. WOR, New York Rich, you're on the Savage Nation.
The pigsty.
Yes.
About the senator. When I was a kid, yes, I used to go fishing at a lake, and the red-winged blackbirds would always be flying around. And nearby, there was a pigsty, and they would always be flying above the pigs. And I heard those red-winged blackbirds, and I knew right away.
What do you mean? Are you telling me that these birds eat waste?
I don't know if they eat waste, no. They're, beautiful little, beautiful birds, but this guy is...
That one, that sound? Well, we're talking about Larry Craig and the bird in the background. Don't you think it's amazing that there was a bird behind him there in clip 10?
Yes, Yeah, it's very amazing. But
especially since the German word for bird is Vogel, and there's a Jewish word for a bird that is Fagel, that has another connotation. Play clip 10. Let me hear it again. I want to see if that's the blackbird.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening.
God, this guy continuously uses words that are inappropriate. And they're so laden with Freudian symbolism. Well, thank you for the call, sir. Boise, Idaho. I used to think that Idaho was... How does this happen in Idaho on top of it all? Idaho, macho, mountains, ranchers. How does this happen up there? Steve and K-Boy up in Boise, Idaho. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Yeah, I just quickly wanted to make the point that Larry Craig was found in the stall of a bathroom, and I've actually shaken hands with the man in the past as a kid, which now I start to feel a little dirty about that as a heterosexual white male with five kids of my own. But
maybe you could have your hand cut off now. God forbid. You feel filthy. It really does, doesn't it?
I just wanted to bring forth the point that in the olden days it used to be called a water closet, and so it still could be called a water closet today. And so basically he still was in the closet, and perhaps this is why the different professors that you played the clips from were relating it to the fact that the quote-unquote straight men who happen to live in a gay lifestyle are still trying to do it in the closet, so to speak.
I'm sorry. It is funny in a certain way. It had a little circumlocution in it, but it really made sense, Steve. No, it must be embarrassing for people from your state, isn't it?
It certainly is for me. Again, I've met the man. I know my father had voted for him many times, and it's just a disgrace to everything that that our state should stand for, because we are a macho state. We do have a lot of hunting and fishing and 4x4 trucks and everything else.
Well, let me ask you something. Let's say he steps down, which is kind of inevitable. Do you think that there'll be another Republican senator? I mean, if there were a vote, this is not going to knock out the people are not going to put in a Democrat, are they?
I truly wouldn't think so, although the Democrats have gained a lot better foothold here in the state lately, simply because we have so many folks from California moving in.
Yeah.
And
it's exactly what I said yesterday. Idaho is becoming the Vermont of the West, where all of the people come out of California, they run away from the problems they created, and they bring the problems that they left behind and recreate them, as they did in Vermont, in Idaho. That's what they're doing with their left-wing attitudes.
That's exactly the situation that we have going on here. I work I have a small business, and I do structured wiring in an area call, and it's basically turning into a modern-day Lake Tahoe. The property values are going sky high because people with the money can pay it, and people around here are basically suckling from the teat trying to make a good living as we can, and so that's worked out great so far. But
yes, well, look, at least there's money in the economy, but politically the state's going to become left-wing very much like Vermont. I'm the first observer to note this, and I'm sure I won't be the last, but that's what's happening. I said yesterday that Idaho is becoming the Vermont of the West precisely for those reasons. Thank you, my friend. And, of course, the whole state isn't Larry Craig. It's just him. That's all there is to it. Kansas City Mo. Bill, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Mr. Savage, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, sir.
I'm wondering, I heard on your show last night about what Chris Matthews said about him being a sexual deviant.
Yes, sir.
I listened to other talk shows today. No one mentioned it. What's going on here? Are they trying to cover up what he said, or are they?
Well, now, what do you mean? What Softball said?
Yeah.
Yes, because what he did there was damn himself for the rest of his broadcast career. By calling Larry Craig a sexual deviant, he has now said that all gays are sexual deviants, or what? Only Larry Craig is a sexual deviant, or this act is that of a sexual deviant? How is he going to get out of this, old softball? Hold on, Bill. Let's play it for those of you who may have missed it. Here's the great Chris Matthews, the man who has been a Democrat operative from the time he was christened. The man used to work for Tip O'Neill. He was once a Democrat. He was a Democrat in the womb. He was a Democrat professionally. He's a Democrat on the air, and he acts like he's an independent broadcaster. But he made an ass of himself yesterday, especially when he said the following. Listen.
Good evening. I'm Chris Matthews in Iowa. Welcome to Hardball. The big story tonight, dirty politics. Idaho Senator Larry Craig, cultural warrior of the right, stands naked tonight, exposed as both a sexual deviant and a world-class hypocrite.
All right. Sexual deviant and world-class hypocrite. I think that the word hypocrite could apply to a softball. Don't you think so?
Don't you think he maybe got a phone call from Barney Frank or something saying, you know, you need to...
I think that the boys at MSNBC must have taken him in the back room and given him a little verbal shellacking and saying, now, Chris, you can't use that phrase sexual deviant in this case because your listeners are liable to put two and two together.
Come, no one else mentioned it, though. I mean, you'd think that they'd all be talking about it.
Well, let's put it to you this way. I was blessed with a good pair of ears.
Well, apparently, it just, went right over the top of them.
You know what, Bill? It's because it's listeners like you that I do this, because I hope people hear what I'm doing for you here. You know, sometimes it sounds like I'm a little light here and having an easy time, but believe me, nothing goes by me. Bill, let me send you a free copy of The Political Zoo. I'm giving them out today. That's all for Labor Day. It's Labor Day, and I'm selling the house in honor of Joe from Atlantic City, for those of you who worked in Shanks Paramount. It's Labor Day, and I'm selling the house. Is it Labor Day already, the end of the summer? My God, the kids, the lunch pails, the crayons, the Ritalin, they're all back to school already. They're already doping the kids up and giving them a lunch pail and Crayola. Every time I drive by a place and I see a mother giving a child a soda or a cola or a coffee and a pastry in the morning, I want to say something. I can't, though, because they would tell me to mind my own business or drop dead or I get arrested. I feel like saying, Miss, you're destroying your child. You're ruining your child. Why are you giving that child pastries? The other day I saw a soccer team. A soccer match was over, and the stupid mothers were rewarding their children with sugars, and they didn't know what they were doing to them because they become ignoramuses. They're like nutritional idiots, this generation of mothers. It seems that all of the information that took so long to put together, let's say from the 40s or the 30s really, right through the 70s, has been thrown out the window like after 85, 90. What happened was a whole new generation of mothers came up, and either they were lazy or they were brainwashed or both, or they themselves were raised by lazy, brainwashed mothers and fathers. And the children today are being fundamentally given the sugar poison that is destroying them. Sugar is probably the number one poison in our society, the sugar poison. How they can do this with them and think it has no effect on their child is beyond me. But, of course, if you ever wanted to do a study of the amount of sugar in foods for children, the amount of sugar that children are consuming, and the amount of Ritalin that they are being prescribed, you'd find almost an equal balance on the scale in terms of proportionality in the increase of both substances. That's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I published it in 1982. I reissued it this year, and it's been a runaway bestseller ever since I did, because I'm trying to educate an entirely new generation of parents on foods for health and health for foods. It's been lost. It shouldn't be lost. It's a little mini encyclopedia. I raised my children on it. I raised me on it. I got news for you. I'm going to go back to something else right now. After I came from the cardiologist today and got that good news, it's not like I don't have any, you know, plaque formation. I do, but it's in the very lowest percentile. And for a man my age, it's like I'm a guy half my age, by the way, which is amazing. Did you know that what I'm going to get at with that is I'm going to say I'm going back to the original diet that I was on for 30 years. I wouldn't touch a piece of meat. I ate fish and poultry, but I wouldn't touch a piece of meat for about 30 years, 25 years. I would not eat certain foods. I wouldn't go near them. I ate no cheese. Then what happened was when I hit 50, I got into radio, and I had to alter my whole life. I said, okay, this is it. I got to give it my all. It's going to require like an opera singer's energy 3 hours a day, and I need more energy than I've been consuming. So I had to start taking in a lot of different – and then I started to slip in my diet. I really did. And a little bit of my exercise. I used to bicycle more, blah, blah, blah. So I would say to you that – all of the vitamin C, all the vitamin E, all of the Siberian ginseng, all of the garlic, all of the wine, all of the beer, all of the vodka, all of the techniques I have used over the years have worked for me, as well as there must be a genetic factor that's in my favor now, hopefully. But I'm going to go back to that more or less pristine diet that I was on. Now, having said that, I want to go back to what I was about to say about the book, which I forgot completely. Can someone remind me where I was going with the book part of it that was in the book? It's very complicated, the whole thing, and I don't want to do health talk right now. But I almost would rather do health than sexual deviant blackbirds and things of that nature. The Healing Children Naturally book is a great book, and that information deserves to be in every parent's home in America. And I got to tell you something. I think I have sold about 25,000 copies since I reissued it a few months ago. I'm leveling with you. And I keep reprinting it. And I printed enough now probably through the Christmas holidays because I think there'll be a lot of purchasing around then. However, I think this book should sell in the millions in order to save another generation from the poisoning that is going on in this country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is astonishing. I told you, remember we were playing today. Play the Craig thing for a minute, not the whole thing, the bird thing for a minute, 10.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically over the last
decade. Okay, let's stop here. We're being clinical about it. There's a bird in the background doing the sound. So this woman sends this to me, Ann Murphy, care of KNEW. Attention, Michael Savage. The beautiful song of the blackbird makes it a symbol of temptations, especially sexual ones. The devil once took on the shape of a blackbird and flew into St. Benedict's face, thereby causing the saint to be troubled by an intense desire for a beautiful girl he had once seen. In order to save himself, St. Benedict tore off his clothes and jumped into a thorn bush. This painful act is said to have freed him from sexual temptations for the rest of his life. Like the crow and the raven, the blackbird is considered a bad omen. However, the sight of two blackbirds sitting together is a symbol of peace and a good omen, Ann Murphy, Marietta, Ohio. I don't believe how intelligent my listeners are. Ann, are you listening to this show? If you are, call on the open line, because I'd like to know where you got this from. I find this astonishingly interesting. You know, I really do. WOR, New York, Rob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, how are you? Well, you kind of stole my thunder with Ann there. I was calling to say the symbolism with the blackbird in literature is death, and it goes back to the days of Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven. And it's kind of ironic because it signals the death of Mr. Craig's political career, don't you think?
Well, something is going on. I mean, when you hear that bird there in the background, it was unbelievable to me. Now, nobody in the radio business is going to pick up on that, but, you know, radio is about sound. If it's about anything, Rob. So if I hear a bird in the background, he's talking like this, and says, something's going on here. There's some symbolism. Thank you for being so astute. KNEW, San Francisco. Michael, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just wanted to say that this guy, Craig, doesn't seem like he played it right at all. If you look at Kennedy, if you look at these other congressmen that got into trouble, they all immediately claimed that it was a deficiency they had to deal with, and they went into rehab. This guy is fighting it. This guy is saying, I'm not homosexual. I shouldn't have pled guilty. He's actually fighting it, and he's not going to come out ahead. This guy should have said, I have a problem. My sexual proclivity is a problem. I need to deal with this. Resigned, and I think this would have put the Republicans in better light. Instead, he's fighting it. So I think that's kind
of... Well, strategically, he made an error by pleading guilty. Let me tell you that. He could have pled not guilty and fought it afterwards. He also would have walked out of there pleading not guilty. I have no idea why he would have pled guilty. That's the part that makes no sense to me.
Michael, what bothers me is that Kennedy, who could have actually killed somebody while driving drunk, immediately went into rehab, and everybody...
Oh, what about the son, the Kennedy son, who was arrested for drunk and with the pills, and everyone's forgotten it, and immediately he's in rehab, and it's washed up and washed away by the media government media complex? How come? Why did that get washed away? Why was that not a case and an incident in a situation?
That's
agree. Right. No, but you're saying the big cop out today is you got a weakness, a sickness, an illness, and go into rehab, and you come out, and it's forgotten. It's the new dispensation. The doctor, the rehab doctor, is the priest of our times. Instead of the confessional,
Savage.
Yeah.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. I can't believe the show is moving along so well and that I am here every day no matter what. It's wonderful to be here with you. I'm really happy that you're listening. Now, compare. I want you to juxtapose two particular political situations. In one party, we have a man who's allegedly been involved in sexual deviancy, male-on-male, in a toilet stall. Allegedly, now. In the other party, the leading candidate, a woman, had to return campaign donations today to a convicted felon who's on the run. Tell me which story will get more coverage and why in two words or less. Answer, liberal press. So, you know what's going to get more coverage. Republicans are compromised. Republicans are hypocrites. But no, Hillary having to return money to a convicted felon on the run, that's not going to get the play. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it proves my point. It proves my point because the newspapers are covering Larry Craig in the toilet, but they're not covering Hillary Clinton, who has to give back the contributions from a Democratic fundraiser who is a fugitive in plain sight, according to the LA Times. That's all. And it's on my website. So go to michaelsavage.com. I linked it up from where? From the LA Times. Even they had the decency to cover it, but not Pinchy, not Sulzberger. Oh, no. So let's go on to the callers because we're talking about a number of topics today on the show. Each of which I think is worthy of discussion. WOR, New York, Stephen, you lead this hour. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I
thank you.
All, just want to thank you for fighting the fight and giving us a voice here in Lakewood, New Jersey.
You're welcome. I understand what you're saying. So what makes you call?
I want to give you a Jewish perspective on the bird chirping in the background over there.
Okay, now hold on. This is very important because there are people who just came into the radio tent who don't know what we're talking about. Larry Craig, the toilet guy from Idaho, gave an interview in May to his local newspaper disputing numerous claims that were floating around about his alleged sexual encounters with men. In clip 10, which is only 13 seconds long, a bird is heard in the background. Listen.
The gay movement in this country has grown aggressively and politically over the last two decades. And they love to stick their finger in people's eyes if they can find any possible opening.
Okay, now the bird in the background is what we're focusing on. And you say there's a symbolism from the biblical perspective. Stephen, what is it?
Yes, in Genesis, when Joseph interprets the dreams of the baker and the winemaker for the Pharaoh, the baker dreams about baskets of bread that are on his head, and birds are feeding from the basket. And Joseph tells him that he's a dead man walking. And the rabbis point out he saw this because birds are usually scared of people. They stay away, unless, of course, a person is dead or politically dead, in which case they won't be scared of him.
I'm speechless that you found that you can relate this to Genesis. I think many millions of Americans who are biblically oriented will thank you for this, Stephen. You know, but you brought some things to mind. You said birds are normally scared of man, but yet they come around in this case when they're not as scared, or they feel like it's almost corpse-like politically, right?
Right.
Well, you know, it reminds me of that cat that we reported on about a month ago on the show, Oscar the Cat in the Nursing Home, who had a sense of when people were going to die, and he would go into their rooms a couple of days before, according to the nurses, and hang around with just sit around that person before they died. They said the cat was going in to keep them company, but others said it's because they could smell death on the individual.
Exactly. They have a sixth sense. They can pick it up.
So you think that this bird was there almost biblically, in a sense saying the man's finished politically?
Yeah, actually, your other callers inspired me to look deeper at it and what was the bird doing there.
Well, where did you just look? How do you cross-reference the Bible? Is there a book where you say, okay, birds and the Bible? I mean, is there such a literature today?
No, actually, if you're religious, one of the tenets is to review the weekly portion. And so you review it. It stays in your mind, and you remember a lot of points about it. And it just becomes the background in your mind.
That's amazing to me. Now, hold on. I you've got my curiosity piqued. You say it's Genesis. Do you know the chapter and verse?
I don't have it in numbers. I can tell you in Hebrew what parsha would be.
I wish I had it in the English numbers. I have in my hand the Holy Scriptures according to the Masoretic text, which is the Jewish Bible, but it's in English. Copyright 1917, 45 and 55. It's a heck of a book. But I'm looking through, there must be 500 yellow tabs in this particular Bible that I carry around or have around. But I wish that someone listening to this show who is a biblical expert could call me and tell me where in Genesis it can be found, because I'll read it on the air. Stephen, which of my books would you like a copy of as a Labor Day gift?
Political Zoo, for sure.
Bingo. Stay on the line, Stephen. You're getting the Political Zoo for sure. I have wonderful, wonderful, wonderful listeners. I really do. Now we'll go on to other callers. There was another one on a totally different topic. Where was the one with the cardiologist? Gone. Dropped. Melanie, Sacramento, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Sajovic. This is Melanie. I appreciate so much you taking my call. I'm actually a fairly new listener, and something that you've been discussing has really piqued my interest, and that is your book, Healing Children Naturally. I was actually curious if you have any knowledge of or any information that would be beneficial to somebody suffering from chronic Heinrich-Schönlein purpura.
From what?
Yeah, exactly. It's known as chronic HSP. It's Heinrich.
Well, hold on. Let me say this. I am not a medical doctor. I am a PhD in nutrition and epidemiology from a great university, a real university with a real degree. And I'm proud of my knowledge in nutrition. And I do know nothing about medicine in that regard. Moreover, I am not able to diagnose or treat illnesses on this program. And so at this point, I'm going to have to say thank you for calling, because I don't do that. There are medical doctors on the air who do a fairly good job on this, and I'm not one of them. I wish I could find the piece on the baker. Enzo, the baker. Remember, I'm Enzo, the baker. Remember Godfather 1 when he stands outside with his hands in his coat? I'm Enzo, the baker. You know, I never met a baker I didn't like. You ever meet a baker you didn't like? There's something about dough, like being around dough, that makes people nice. Who would go into that field that wasn't nice? They always covered, like, they smell good, they look good, they're nice, they make dough. I never met a baker who wasn't a decent person. Isn't it interesting? You know, I remember saying, just an oddball thing. I'm a baker. You ever eat fresh bread in the morning the minute it comes out of a bakery? Do you know the difference between that and bread that's 2 hours old? Night and day. It's like, I knew a friend that was a fisherman. He owns a restaurant in the city. He said, you probably never ate fresh fish in your life unless you caught it. He said, I'm a fisherman. He said, the fish you're eating, no matter how fresh it is 2 days old, no matter where it comes, I mean, the fish is caught out in the ocean. It's not fresh fish. You didn't eat it on the boat. So it's an interesting phenomenon, you know. How can you get fresh fish unless you fish? I never forget the days I'd go in a restaurant. I'd say to the guy, is it fresh or frozen? Remember that gimmick in the 70s? They would say it's fresh frozen. That's when they started yanking my chain. So I'd say, is it fresh or frozen? Yes, sir, it's fresh frozen. I said, please don't do this to me. Is it fresh? They would do that to you in those days. Or how about the guys when you'd order a glass of wine? They still do it in San Francisco, only in the city to get away with it without there being mayhem in the restaurant. They pour a glass of wine in a balloon glass, and they put in like 3 ounces of wine, and the glass looks empty. Now, why do you serve wine like that? So they once did that to me. I think it was 6 ounces was the required amount. They gave it to me in like a soda glass, a 12-ounce round glass. So I said, why are you giving me a half a glass of wine? The guy gives me a lecture like one of these Craig types. And he says to me, well, that's the proper way to drink wine, so you can swirl it and drink it. I said, it's maybe your proper way to drink wine. I want you to fill that glass of wine. He says, no, that's not how we do it. I said, charge me double, Fill the glass or I'm not drinking it. I won't start with a half a glass of wine. That's what goes on in the Bay Area. Everyone's an expert. Every one of these losers in this city corrects everything you say. Do you ever catch that one around here, too? It could be somebody making $5 an hour. If you say a word to them, they correct your English for you. They themselves haven't gone past, let's say, the ninth grade, and they have a low-paying job. I mean, it happens to people. But even on the phone, you say a word, they always got to correct you in what you say to them on the telephone. That's why they wind up a supervisor or a mayor. It's the only job that's fit for them. That's how you become any Toosome Newsome. He would have been better off as a maitre d' than as a mayor. He would have done a better job. WOR in New York, Pete, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you're my favorite talk show host. Listen, that guy Fred who called today, I'm glad he called, but he's wrong. According to all the websites, I've been reading them for a year, Egyptians are Mediterranean Caucasoids. They're not white. I'm talking about ancient Egyptians. They're not white, but they are Mediterranean Caucasoids. In fact, I wish you would do some research because you are a doctor. You are a scientist.
Okay, but wait a minute. As I said, I have no axe to grind in this particular argument. They came up because there was a protest in Philadelphia that King Tut was not portrayed as African-looking enough. And to me, it's such a sensitive issue and where I don't really care what the results are. I mean, the truth is what I do care, anthropologically. I don't know what King Tut was. What was King Tut? You're saying he's more Caucasian than African?
Well, most Caucasians are not white anyway.
The Iranians, by the way, you know, the Iranians are not Arabic. Did you know that?
Well, that I definitely know. And
People know that Iranians, although they're assumed because they're Muslim to be Arabs, they're not. They're considered Aryans. Did you know that?
There's another group that has, I hate to say.
Well, we had a little trouble in the world from the last people who thought that their Aryanism made them superior to everybody, didn't we?
They actually weren't Aryans that much, but there's another ethnic group that...
Yeah, no. The Hun thought he was of the Aryan superior race, and he wound up with a wrecked nation. The same is going to happen again. History is going to repeat itself. You see, Ahmadinejad does not know history, so he's going to repeat it. Those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. Ahmadinejad does not know he's walking in the shoes of Hitler. I actually think that Ahmadinejad is Hitler reincarnated, and he's re-walking in the same shoes as Hitler, and unfortunately, the Iranian people are going to suffer for it. Thank you for the call. That's all I have to say on this issue. Do we have a biblical expert in the audience who can tell me what chapter and verse I could read about Joseph interpreting the bird for the baker? I'm looking in that in Genesis. I can flip normally, and I can't find it. You can't just flip. Then the Lord caused to rain upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah. Do you ever hear Sodom and Gomorrah? Many of you don't even know it's biblical. Now, I live in Sodom and Gomorrah here in San Francisco, filled with the people from Sodom and Gomorrah. The Lord caused to rain upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Did you ever hear the phrase, don't look back? Well, even if you're an old hippie and a liberal, you certainly heard don't look back because Bob Dylan made a song and a little movie, a cinema verite movie called Don't Look Back. But of course, Bob Dylan was only quoting Genesis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We had a caller from Sacramento who was sending a copy of the Political Zoo who found it. It's Genesis 16, for those, chapter 40, verse 16. And here's how it starts. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Apparently, the butler and the baker were Jewish. So then it goes on and says, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also saw my dream, and behold, three baskets of white bread were on my head. And in the uppermost basket there was of all manner of baked foods for Pharaoh, and the birds that eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are 3 days. Within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the bird shall eat thy flesh from off thee. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler, and the head of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler back unto his butlership, and he gave the cup unto Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. See, the Bible is a living document. Those of you who are cynics don't understand it. It's It's like we're going around and around and around. It doesn't matter that we're wearing business suits and ties and it's in a toilet stall. The people who are religious, whether they be Christians or Jews in regard to this story, see biblical meaning in what happened to Mr. Craig. It's the uncovering, in essence. It's the uncovering. And this is not the beginning, by the way, of the uncovering of our politician. He's not the first one to have been uncovered, and he's not going to be the last, I can guarantee you. And I find it quite interesting that like 2 days after Craig's story breaks, this thing with Hillary suddenly blows up when it was probably festering 2 days ago and they blew. Why did they suddenly blow out the Craig story 2 days ago? Why did they hold it for 3 months? Why did they hold it for 3 months and release it the other night? Because the Hillary story was about to break and the Democrat machine did everything they could, I would guess, to keep it undercover till the Craig story broke and then let it out. They did a deal with the newspapers saying, all right, let out the Craig story first. You've had it for 3 months. Let it out. Blow it up. Get our little Pratt boy there a softball to make a big issue of it. He's a Democratic operative. Who else do we have in the newspapers? All right, get them all over there on MSNBC. We own them like a bunch of cheap tricks in a house of ill repute. Who else do we own? NBC, how many do we own at ABC? How many do we own at CBS? How many do we own at the Times? All right, blow the story out. And then so they blow out the Craig story, and then when that's hitting at its peak, then they seep out the story of Hillary having to give money back to this convicted felon on the run, fugitive in plain sight. That's how it works. That's how the big boys play politics. What do you expect to hear this on the evening news with the drums and the $15 million set? You know, boom, 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 you know, the heavy drum and the thing, you think that's the truth? That's the truth because they have a bigger drum? I don't have a drum. I don't need a drum. I don't need the electronic beams in your eyes. Like every minute Fox News gives you a news. How many news breaks can they have? News flash, like a conditioned response, bong, news flash from Fox News. Every second, it's like over-conditioning. Eventually, the rat stops jumping to the tune. You know, they ought to change the bong already. How many news flashes are going to have every five seconds? Here's a news flash, what I just gave you. The Bible's a news flash. You're living history all over again. We're repeating Savage. History. Well, the breaking news of the day is that Hillary has agreed to give back money that she received from a Democrat fundraiser who's a fugitive, and so have other Democrats. But I doubt that it's going to make the evening news cycle. They're going to continue to talk about Craig and the toiletrist, and that shows you once again the bias in the media. But if you want to read it, I have it up on michaelsavage.com. That's all. We can move on, though. I don't want to just talk about this for 30 more minutes. Please. Can we talk about anything else? WOR, New York, Al, save me. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I just want to say what a pleasure it is listening to you. I'm sitting here listening to you on the radio and watching the Yankees beat up on the Red Sox. I call you doctor because I have two daughters and a son who are doctors, and I know how much work it is to get that title.
That's right. Even my PhD, you may say, well, what's a PhD today? Mine was a real good one from a great university. It took me many years. And so I'm very proud of it. Thank you for understanding that it has meaning when it's not an honorary degree or given to a politician. So the Yankees are winning by what score?
3-0 over the Red Sox. It's in.
Okay. All right, Al. Thanks for giving me the baseball score. Here's a new article from the lawyer for Colonel Chesani, who we've supported. You gave over $250,000, maybe $300,000 to his defense. I gave $20,000 of my own money. His lawyer has just reported that when Colonel Jeffrey Chesani is exonerated again of the charges against him for the nun massacre at Haditha, where he wasn't present, they may haul Pennsylvania Democratic Congressman John Murtha into court, suing him for libel. I can't wait for that day. I cannot wait for that day. You may not know this, but Staff Sergeant Frank Wetterich, one of the other defendants in the investigation now awaiting a hearing on murder charges, is already suing Congressman Murtha for those libelous comments. He insists that Murtha should be held accountable for taking the words of Iraqi enemies and calling the Marines cold-blooded murderers. That's what Murtha did. Staff Sergeant Wetterich's attorneys are suing Congressman Murtha for libel, saying that the Marines were cold-blooded murderers, and that suit's still ongoing, said the attorney, Mr. Rooney, for Chesani. We're not suing Murtha right now. I know that Frank Wetterich's attorney attorneys are suing him for libel, and we will explore that option once our criminal case has been concluded. We hope to show that Murtha is guilty of libel against our client, because when he accused the unit's officers of covering up the incident, he could only have been referring to Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. Rooney recalled that in June of 06, Murtha told ABC's Charles Gibson, "I know there was a cover-up someplace. They knew about this a few days afterwards, and there's no question the chain of command tried to stifle the story." Murtha, Mr. Murtha did this, and I know why he did this. He did this because he was currying favor with the incoming Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat Party. He smelled that they were going to be victorious, and he wanted more power inside the party, and so they gave it to him. Do we have any of that Murtha commentary from those days, guys, that you can dig up? Because I want the people to hear what we're talking about here. It's an important story. You look it up now, because this is much bigger than Craig in the toilet. Here we had a sitting congressman, himself an ex-Marine, having the audacity to attack these guys based on the words of a communist left-wing slimebag reporter for Time magazine who got it from the enemy himself. And based upon that, these poor guys have been fighting for their lives. Now, here's your Senator Murtha from Pennsylvania. Listen.
An IED exploded. It killed one Marine. And then a taxi drives up. When a taxi comes up, there's four or five people in it. And they shoot those four or five people unarmed. And then they go on a rampage throughout the houses and kill people. One woman, as I understand it, in talking to the officials in the Marine Corps, was bending over a child, pleading for mercy, and they shot her in cold blood.
That's Congressman Jack Murtha. Are you proud that you have a congressman like this? You know, three or four of the cases have been dismissed and thrown out because they know that it was an invention of the enemy. How do you feel about a congressman taking the side of an enemy during a war? Don't you think that's a bigger story than Senator Craig tapping somebody's foot in the toilet stall? And why do we never hear about Murtha and what he did to our Marines and how he's almost ruined their lives and how much money they've had to raise to defend their lives and their honor, as opposed to a congressman tapping his foot in the stall who may or may not have been coming on to another man? What does that tell you about the bias in the media, number one, and the sickness in the heads of these people who call themselves journalists? Mike, New York City, OR, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
There's no way that if this guy, Senator Craig, was gay, he would go to a perfect stranger in an airport restroom and start tapping his foot. It's unheard of. There's no way in the world this happened.
You say there's no way in the world this happened?
No way.
Well, I don't know whether Craig did it, but apparently there are professors who say that this is a typical behavior for some men who do this. Listen to clip 16. Here's a so-called professor of Ohio State talking about why gays do this in bathrooms. Listen to 16.
There is sort of a thrill to the hunt, to the excitement of sex in a public place, of doing something that potentially does have negative consequences for you.
Uh-huh. Oh, so it's fun? Now, here's a guy named Pinsky. I don't know who he is. Dr. Drew Pinsky. Commenting on Senator Larry Craig pleading guilty to committing a lewd act in a public restroom at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. So let us listen to clip 22.
There is a separate category, which is men who have sex with men. And so people can genuinely get up and say, I'm not gay, but I'm still one of these people that have sex with men. You know, this is political speak, and these are attorneys talking, and they may split hairs like
but
that.
But he's not if you talking about the toilet. How so boring. That's all they're talking about. Everyone's excited about this topic, but not about what Murtha did to these Marines. To me, it's a much bigger story. Now, here's President Bush with his latest assessment of the war in Iraq during a speech in Reno, Nevada. Hold on now. Everyone get ready. Clip 29.
There are unmistakable signs that our strategy is achieving the objectives we set out. Security progress must come first, and only then can political progress follow. First locally, and then in Baghdad.
Sounds like rubbish to me. How could you have political progress in a country where the party that was in power, tied to the Sunni religion, is behind 85% of the bombings in the country, and you won't do anything about it? I mean, either you build internment camps for all of the Sunnis who were once in the Saddam regime, or you deport them, or you shoot them. Unless you do that, you may as well get out now because you're never going to win this war. In order to denazify Germany, my friend, if you want to study history, the way they denazified Germany was they killed the Nazis who were not going along with the program of denazification. They sent out squads of American soldiers who were hardened soldiers, and they hunted them down, and they when they caught them, they tied them to a post and shot them. There was no trial. There was no CNN. There was no BS. There was no Guantanamo. There was no bringing them back to justice. They gave them frontier justice, and that's how they denazified Germany. It took about 2 years after the war. But this is going on to a point where, as I said last week, if we haven't won this war by now, we're never going to win it. You can't win it through attrition, because there are more of them than there are our men, and they're willing to die for their cause, and our men really don't want to die, nor should they want to die for their cause. Do you understand that? So this is, I think, again, very questionable and very sad that we have to listen to this. Yes, there's a real war going on. Yes, the Islamo-fascists are on the attack around the world, and the only people who don't believe that are the psychopathic liberals, particularly those in San Francisco who are on drugs, who think that it's all made up by the reactionaries, all the pretty boys in nice suits, who have the audacity to say that there is no Islamo-fascist war, that it's simply reactionaries building up a war. Now, if you're on drugs and you're a pretty boy who has a Colgate smile, I suppose you can live in that delusion. But if you live in the real world, you look around the world and you see bombs going off in India, bombs going off in Russia, bombs going off in the Philippines, bombs going off in Indonesia, bombs going off in London, bombs going off wherever they can set them off, and they're all being set off by the same group and the same affiliation, and it's all related to Islamofascism. But then again, if you're a deluded fool who drives around and has a Pepsodent smile and you think that that's enough to get you through life, you can simply say, ah, oh, that's all reactionary stuff in order to build up a war. So there really is a war. There is a war, but we're not fighting it the right way. There's only one way to fight it, and that's to destroy the enemy in a stronghold. And we're not doing that. We're just not doing it. That's why we're not winning, and that's why it's so controversial. Trust me, if Bush had won this 3 years ago, it just wouldn't have been so controversial. America loves a winner. They can't stand a loser, and he's acting like a loser. I mean, shall I make it any clearer for you? This is a loser's war that we're fighting, and we all sense it. You can't keep changing the goalposts and changing the innings. You can't say it's a 15-round fight and then make it a 25-round fight, and then a 35-round fight, and then a 45-round fight. You understand what I'm saying to you? You got to either win the war or get out of there. That's all there is to it. San Diego, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, doctor, I'm your biggest fan. And I just think this whole thing with the bird is over the top. In the morning, if I hear a crow make a noise, do I climb under the blankets and get my Bible out?
No. But I think it's interesting. The birds in the background, you mean you think they have no meaning?
No, absolutely not. I don't. I think you're way over the top with this, and you could dress this up in anything you want. I'm hearing birds. I'm outside right now. Do I go inside and get online and find out what it all means? I think it's just a little over.
Well, Paul, I think, Paul, I'm not saying that because the birds are outside your window, you should worry that the bird of death is coming, but is the bird pecking weed out of your hair? What's a bird doing? I mean, the bird's not dancing in your wig, is he?
No, he's not dancing in my wig. I just didn't know.
Well, at least you have a good sense of humor. At least you have a good enough sense of humor and the decency to call me instead of getting mad.
No, I'm not mad at all. I didn't know.
Now, let me ask you, I want to get a picture of you. Where are you in San Diego? What exactly?
Oceanside, California.
Are you outside or inside?
Pardon me?
Are you outdoors or indoors?
Right now I'm outdoors. I'm in my backyard, and I hear birds every
And I would and wait, time. And is this the fifth or the sixth drink you've had today?
It's probably the fifth.
All right, my friend. Nothing goes by me. I hear it all. When you come down off that jag you're on, you rethink the bird thing and see if I'm overdoing it. WRKO, they still listen to me in Boston. Vivian, welcome to the Savage Nation. Welcome.
Dr. Savage, I'd like to thank you very much. A couple of weeks ago when the illegals in San Francisco was asking for your head on a platter like John the Baptist, you talked about a poem named If by Kipling.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to thank you very much. What I've decided to do about that poem is I downloaded it, and I'm going to embroider it for our two sons, who are, they really are wonderful sons. And I
Let me tell you something. It's interesting, but that poem helped me get through that attack upon me, because the people who, I learned a long time ago, be particular whose insults you take to heart. I don't take the mayor's insults to heart. I don't take the vermin called supervisors' insults to heart, because if this group of rats who passed a proclamation saluting Hugo Chavez, a fascist dictator, could attack me, then I feel honored by their attack, Vivian.
Well, you were a gentleman through the whole cause. I mean, you're quite the gentleman. You really are.
Well, I didn't blow it, did I? And I didn't run away and hide from them, did I?
Did not, Matthew.
And every dog has his day. And mark my words, one day the American people will see the linkage between one and more of the senators, the supervisors in San Francisco, and the fascist dictatorship of Hugo Chavez. And when that day comes and those rats and those traitors are marched out in handcuffs by the U.S. Marshals or the FBI, you'll find out that I was right all along. Because, again, I stand by my words. I don't care that all of those stinkers try to pass a proclamation slamming me. They shame themselves and they shame their families for life. These are the same rats who signed the proclamation saluting Hugo Chavez, a fascist dictator. I'm in great company if they hate me. That's all I can say. And one day San Francisco shall rise again from the slime that runs it. Thank you for the call. If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, you are a man, my son. That's one of the couplets that's kept me going since I'm 20 years old. Read Kipling. If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you will be a man, my son. You know, there's so much power in words. Words can kill. Words can heal. And these vermin, these rats, tried to kill me with words. Well, guess what? It's going to boomerang on them. I'll be right back. Savage. Many of you don't understand what went on here, and I got to, you know, it's a sore wound that was opened up again just now. You've got a city filled with fraudulent, liberal, corrupt politicians who said that the reason they try to pass a condemnation of Michael Savage is they didn't like what I had to say. And if you say to these cretins that free speech means free speech for all, even for speech that you find uncomfortable and uncommon, and they say, well, I still don't like what he had to say, then they have become something other than a liberal, haven't they? They have become a crypto-fascist, the very thing that they claim not to be, they are. Gerardo Sandoval, here's the Hall of Shame. Jake McGoldrick, Michelle Alioto-Pierre, Aaron Peskin, Ross Murakami, Chris Daly, Sean Ellsburn, Bevin Dufty, Tom Amiano, Sophie Maxwell, and Mayor Newsom himself. Not one of them came out and said the following. I may not approve of what Michael Savage said, and I don't, but he has every right to say it because I am a liberal and I believe in free speech. By definition, these are Mussolini fascists. And they're not fooling me nor anybody else. You want to hear what liberalism is? Listen to this. You'll hear what liberalism is.
I remember the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is, they're threats to national security. That was stated
on the picture.
All right,
you get the picture. So a real liberal is Dan Horowitz, the attorney who came to my aid. He understands what the First Amendment is, not these fraudulent supervisors who hide behind their progressivism. A real liberal is his cousin Marty Garvis, who was Lenny Bruce's lawyer and who is currently Imus's lawyer, who sent a six-word email from Italy and said, I'm on vacation. If Michael needs me, I will come back. And he's a liberal, a real liberal. Unlike Gerardo Sandoval, who passed a commendation for Hugo Chavez a number of years ago. Unlike Michelle Alioto-Peer, Aaron Peskin, that fraud, marching around like he's better than everybody. Mr. Progressive Aaron Peskin. You would have been happy in a communist bund when you were a child. You're not fooling me for a minute. You're not a progressive. You're a regressive. You're a throwback, you bum you. You bum you. You're a Stalinist bum. You know what a First Amendment lawyer is? Dan Horowitz. That's a First Amendment liberal. Not you, you fraudulent Stalinist trade unionist bum you. You're a little petty martinet bureaucrat who belongs in the ex-Soviet Union. Aaron Peskin and your pack, your hordes of blackbirds. But I haven't had my day yet. I will have my day, Peskin and McGoldrick and Mirakiyami and Dufty and Ammiano and Newsom. You may not like what I say, but you're not going to stop me from saying it. Because you live in America. You don't live in the ex-Soviet Union. And you don't live in Venezuela. You don't live in Venezuela where you can shut off a radio show that you don't like. And I don't care how many drugs you may be on and how many Pepsodent and smiles you may have. You stink, the lot of you. You stink and you sicken me. You sicken me, all of you. You're in the hall of shame. To millions of Americans, they know your name. You shamed your family's name. You owe me an apology, every last one of you. You want to know what the First Amendment is? I am the First Amendment. It is speech that you find distasteful. It is speech that makes you uncomfortable. That is what a great lawyer understands as the First Amendment. Not what you petty martinet Democrat hacks think the First Amendment is. You have shamed your family name for eternity. Oh, you can laugh at me all you want. Slap yourself on the back. Most of America knows your names now, and you have shamed yourself. You want out of that little place you put yourself in? You send me a letter of apology.
Savage.